Minnesota House of Representatives Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform will come to order. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
2021.
I don't hear sound. Is that just me or is that?
We can hear you.
They're coming in loud and clear.
Try somebody else. Representative Nelson, if you take over the minutes.
Chair Mariani.
Oh, yes, I have my volume down. Present.
Chair Mariani, I was having issues as well with Zoom this morning.
We're in the same boat, Representative Jackson.
Seeing none, all of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye. Vice Chair Frazier.
Aye.
Present.
Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Chairman, it was, I said it, I had an eye.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Representative.
Representative Feist.
Can you hear me?
Thank you.
Someone else is on another committee and we can hear that in the background. If you could mute that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Representative Grossel. Excused. Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Cleavorn.
Present.
Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Lucero.
Whereas April showers bring May flowers, I'm trying to figure out what March showers bring.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Novotny.
Novotny. Present.
Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, present, and Poston needs to mute.
Representative Pinto?
Present.
Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, present.
Representative Vang?
Present.
Representative Zhang?
Here.
That concludes roll call with 18 present.
Very well, there is a quorum. Members, this hearing is being conducted remotely on an electronic platform pursuant to Minnesota House Rule 10.01. The public can view House Rule on the Minnesota House website and can also visit the committee page for this committee for instructions on accessing this hearing via streaming video, as well as instructions for participating in public testimony. Members, we are deadline day, so no doubt other members are pulling simultaneous duties with other committees. You have my deep empathies. I've done that many years. It's tough. The key is going to be obviously just to keep the sound from that committee from creeping into this space. So if you can do the best you can, I appreciate it. But I know what some of you are juggling with, and it's not fun, but it's part of the work that we have to do here.
The Chair Mariani?
Yes, Representative Johnson.
A couple things. One, I'm just wondering if my members are going to get the agenda that has not been sent out to our members yet, and the committee has already started. Also, we know of at least two or three letters that were sent to the committee to be posted in opposition to House File 1762 that are not posted.
Duly noted, Representative Johnson. We've had a few snags in getting the agenda out. I think the first part of the agenda has been sent out. The rest will be coming shortly. I'll move deliberately and slowly to make sure that we're tracking and you have enough time to know what we're dealing with until you receive that. But please keep an eye on those emails. And those letters will be posted. And hopefully that'll happen sometime soon. It's important to do that. So thank you for putting that on the record.
Yep, it is disappointing that these letters were sent 24 to 48 hours ago, and they could not get on the board on the committee page so the public could view them before we have this hearing.
Yes, Representative Johnson, rest assured the public will be viewing. We'll have an opportunity to view those. As they say, sometimes things happen, and but again, duly noted and for the record. With that, members, our first bill today is House File Actually, I need a motion to adopt their minutes. I'm wondering if our vice chair can so move to adopt the minutes of March 11th for the committee.
So moved, Chair.
Very well. Representative Frazier moves adoption of the minutes from March 11th. Representative Johnson, roll call, okay with this?
That would be fine.
I mean, I'm sorry, a voice vote. Okay.
Voice vote will be fine.
All right, very well. Discussion? If not, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the minutes from March 11th are adopted. We have four bills up today. The first one is House File 1378, sponsored by Chair Becker Finn. And Representative Becker Finn, the chair of this committee, moves to refer House File 1378 to the General Register. Your bill is before us.
Right. Thank you, Chair Mariani. I'm also happy to say that I'm coming to you live from my homelands on the Leech Lake Reservation today with this bill. So House File 1378, very simply, provides that the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe has concurrent jurisdictional law enforcement authority within the reservation boundaries. This is an issue that's come up in different ways over the last couple of years, but I think this specific bill is just regarding the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. And I do want to make sure, I know we've got lots of bills today, and I want to make sure that we have full time for our testifiers, as our chairman, Chairman Farron Jackson, is here today, as well as our chief of police. And so with that, I will turn it over to my testifiers.
Very well. Welcome to the committee, Chairman Jackson. Always good to welcome our neighbors from the Ojibwe Leech Lake Band. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony. Tell us about this bill and why it's important. I don't see a video yet, so there might be some connection issue, but we'll wait for a second.
Mr. Chair, I believe he's calling in from his iPhone. It's Chairman's iPhone. So he may have to unmute with star six.
All right. Star six. I do see the chairman's phone on the participants list, but we're not getting a sound yet. I do see it unmuted. It looks like he might be trying to call back in now.
Hey, good morning, members of the committee. I'm on the phone with Chairman Jackson, and I think he's having some technical difficulties with hearing the committee on his phone.
I see.
So I'm going to have him dial in on his cell phone. I apologize.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Fairbanks.
And I'm sorry, I'm staff here. I do see the chairman here. Chairman, if you do try to provide your testimony, we may be able to hear you. But he can't hear us, of course. My apologies.
You know, if Mr. Chair, if it's okay, we could go to Chief Washington while we figure out the audio issues for Chairman Jackson.
That certainly makes sense. So welcome to the committee. Police Chief Kenneth Washington, please identify yourself for the name, for the record. Give us your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair Mariani. My name is Kenneth Washington. I am the police chief for the Leech Lake Tribal Police Department.
Welcome.
Chair Mariani, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify on behalf of House File 1378. I am currently the chief of police for the Leech Lake Tribal Police Department. I have worked at the Leech Lake Tribal Police Department since 2003. The Leech Lake Tribal Police Department was originally established in 1999 as the Public Safety Division of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. The department was founded to enforce civil regulatory laws on the Leech Lake Indian Reservation. In 2000, a law enforcement agreement was entered into between the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe and the four counties that overlap reservation boundaries. These counties include Beltrami, Cass, Hubbard, and Itasca. This agreement is still in effect today. The Leech Lake Tribal Police Department is fully functioning like any other department, including a fully staffed dispatch center that is open 24 hours a day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Our department employs approximately 30 sworn police officers in 17 civilian positions. The department has a patrol division consisting of two sergeants and two senior officers in charge, watching over 15 patrol officers. The department includes specific areas of coverage, including two school resource officers for that lie within the reservation. We also have two highway safety officers for extra enforcement with impaired drivers and traffic accidents, as well as a gaming officer specific to the local casinos and hotels. The investigation division consists of six investigators who specialize in specific areas such as human trafficking, sexual assaults, narcotics, violent crime, and general financials. These investigators work side by side with partnering agencies daily and on their own with felony level cases. While each investigator has a specific area of expertise, they all are able to contribute when serious calls for service arise on or nearby the Leech Lake Reservation. We have multiple investigators who currently work on both state and federal drug task forces and have special agent statuses. Our department patrols approximately 1,000 square miles that cover portions of all four counties. The Leech Lake Reservation is the largest reservation in the state, with the number of on-reservation residents. Our officers confront and respond to the same calls for service as any other law enforcement agency daily. Our department provides the same service to the Leech Lake band members as it does to any citizens living on or near the Leech Lake Reservation. Our department has continually seen an increase in calls for service, with the department averaging over 10,000 calls a year. We are continually called on by our partnering agencies for assistance in handling calls on the reservation and nearby. As part of the agreement, officers of the Leech Lake Tribal Police Department are required to be licensed by the Minnesota Board of Peace Officer Standards and Training, Minnesota Police Board. The officers of the Leech Lake Tribal Police Department are held to the same exact standards as every other peace officer in the state of Minnesota. From the initial educational requirements to certification by post to continuing education credits, our officers are bound to the same policies and rules as every other law enforcement agency. The Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe is seeking this change in legislation to reflect the progress of our department has made since its formation over 20 years ago. Our department continues to work side by side daily on the calls for service with the overlapping counties. Yet the statute, as it currently reads, requires our department to have an agreement with the local sheriffs to operate. This should not be the case, as it allows a county, which is a non-sovereign entity, the ability to dictate to a sovereign entity, our federally recognized tribal government. The language in HF 1378, House File 1378, fixes this inequality and will allow our department the independence to continue to provide the quality services to the public and citizens of the Leech Lake Reservation. We are asking to be recognized just as a local law enforcement municipality would be within a county. I urge you to pass this legislation. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today. If you have any specific questions, I would be happy to answer them. Miigwech.
Thank you, Chief Washington. Thank you for your testimony, and also thank you for your service to the people of Leech Lake and to Minnesota in public safety. I think we now may be able to connect with Chairman Jackson, so let's give that a try, Representative Becker Finn. Chairman Jackson, if you can hear me, welcome to the committee. As I said earlier, it's always an honor and a privilege to have our neighbors from the Leech Lake Band join us here, virtually at least today, but always here at the at our state capitol. Please come forward, state your name, and give us your testimony.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Chairman.
Oh, great. Thank you. I'm sorry. Technical difficulties again, but Anine, bonjour. Good morning, committee members. I just want to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. As chairman of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, it's again working hard to pass legislation to establish concurrent law enforcement authority for the Leech Lake Police Department. This is similar to legislation signed into law in 2019 for the Prairie Island Indian Community Police Department. We are thankful for for all our bill authors, Representative Becker Finn and Representative Matt Bliss, and for the bipartisan support of legislators that have been supportive of our effort. I want to be clear that the Leech Lake Band has had a successful cooperative law enforcement agreement with the state of Minnesota in the four counties overlapping our reservation. And the band fully intends to continue these positive relationships going forward. The bill before the committee today for the Leech Lake Band is simply seeking to achieve equitable treatment for our tribal police department. As Chief Washington has said, our 30 sworn officers are held to the exact same standards, rules, and requirements as every other peace officer in the state, and they proudly serve our residents and visitors alike. As chairman of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, I want to make sure to recognize and thank the officers and professional staff of the Leech Lake PD who work and sacrifice every day to keep our community safe. More than anyone, they deserve to have this legislation passed into law. If passed, this bill would appropriately recognize the sovereignty of the Leech Lake tribal government to operate its own police department. Counties are political subdivisions of the state and are not provided with any sovereign authority. Therefore, it does not make sense for one sovereign government to have to obtain the approval or support of an entity that does not itself have any sovereign authority. So this House File 1378 corrects this imbalance, and we are thankful for your support on this important legislation. Miil Chimigwich.
Thank you so much, Chairman Jackson. Representative Becker Finn, we also have a public testifier, Commissioner Harrington, for the Department of Corrections. So let me invite the commissioner to come forward, identify himself, and provide his testimony.
Chair Mariani, John Harrington, Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety, and I am happy to be here with you today. And we are here again as the Department of Public Safety supporting the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe's proposal to have tribal policing powers fully recognized. Tribal operated police departments and law enforcement agencies provide that broad range of public safety services that you've already heard about, that there are 24/7, 365, policing operation, and quite frankly, having visited most of them across the state of Minnesota, I can tell you that they are well-equipped, well-trained, and oftentimes better staffed than local police departments that are nearby. In fact, in conversations I've had with several of them, the local county sheriffs have had to depend on the tribal police department because they did not have a midnight shift, or they didn't have the number of people necessary to be able to do drug enforcement, human trafficking enforcement. So we depend on tribal police departments to be able to do that work. Sheriff Minnesota, as has been mentioned, tribal police are required to have a JPA with the local sheriff. And we can only need to look back to an impasse between the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe and the county sheriff that resulted in a joint powers agreement being ended for 2 years. During that two-year period, members that lived in the Mille Lacs Band area were effectively denied police services. Their local police department was not allowed to do full police services, and the county sheriff was not providing them. And so this put them at a great risk at a time when we were seeing more drug addiction. We had all kinds of other crime issues. And so it is absolutely essential that we continue the movement that we saw in Prairie Island in 2019-2020, when the legislature enacted full general policing powers for Prairie Island. I can tell you, having talked to Prairie Island, they are completely satisfied with the work that's being done down there. They have not seen any diminution. If anything, they've seen an improvement in policing services since that law was passed. The Department of Public Safety is 100% supportive of this piece of legislation. We believe it is long overdue. And in fact, the Prairie Island example, we want Leech Lake to join them as a full police department. And we believe that when we have that done, this will act as an example for other counties and other police departments around the state of Minnesota to follow suit.
Very well, thank you, Commissioner, for your testimony. And I certainly am impacted and struck by what can go wrong when things go wrong. Unfortunately, they rarely do, but when they do, the price is just too high in order to maintain, at least in the chair's opinion, an antiquated approach to public safety, particularly given the professionalism that we're seeing in departments like the Leech Lake Band. All right, Representative Becker-Fay, I don't see any other testimonies, and there are no amendments, members. And so let's go to a committee discussion. And first we have Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Becker-Finn. I'm just wondering, have you talked to the Sheriff's Association on this bill, what their stance is, or if are they, I'm just wondering if they're here to testify as well.
Chair Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Sheriff's Association is, I know they sent a letter to me saying that they were in opposition to the bill. But I will say, just reading the letter, you know, they speak to significant confusion to the citizens being served by each agency. But I can tell you, as someone who spends time here at Leech Lake, is that the citizens here are fully supportive of this. And in fact, Representative Bliss, your colleague Representative Bliss, who represents this area, is my number two author on this bill. And Senator Eichhorn, who represents the people of this community in the Senate, is the Senate author. So respectfully disagree with the Sheriff's Association's supposed problems with the bill.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. I know I've received that letter this morning as well from the Sheriff's Association. Representative Becker-Finn, I'm wondering if there's anything in this bill that would require certain levels of crime to be handled in state court or in tribal court.
Sheriff Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we want to go the road of talking about tribal jurisdiction over crimes, we could spend an entire semester of law school on that topic. This bill simply puts the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe's law enforcement at the same level as other municipalities and other law enforcement departments.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Becker-Finn, that's one of the issues. Because as a sovereign nation, it's a little different than just a city. It's one of the issues I have issues with this bill. I was reluctant on the Prairie Island issue, but I'm using that sort of as a test case. Prairie Island is still under the mutual aid agreements and working under that, and it's working well. One of the issues that I have is with those mutual aid agreements, it specifies what level of crimes can go in tribal court, what has to go into state court. It makes it because in the tribal court, the state courts do not, last I heard, do not have access to what happens in the tribal courts. You could have some serious offenses that are handled in tribal court that we'd know nothing about. And that's why these mutual aid agreements are there, to make sure that serious crimes are actually handled in state court, so the rest of the public is also aware of what's going on, and we can make sure that those individuals aren't something like that, if it would be require a sex offender registration, that those people aren't hiding in the community and possibly having be dangerous, possible dangers to the public. In the rest of the state. So that's the importance of these mutual aid agreements. So until that issue is resolved, I have a tough time supporting this bill.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate Chief Washington and Director Harrington being on this call to answer a couple questions if I could. Chief Washington, Could you describe the nature of your relationship as far as 911 dispatch, and are you signed on and subscribed to the armor system?
Chief Washington, please.
Thank you for that question, sir. The Leech Lake Tribal Police Department does have its own armor radio plan. We are probably one of the first tribes in the state of Minnesota elected to proceed with having our own plan. So with that capability there, all of our officers and the surrounding county officers have the ability to scan each other's radio traffic. And then part of our daily participation in calls for service, our dispatch communication centers communicated with each other on a daily basis in regards to calls that are occurring within our shared responsibilities area to make sure that we're on the same page, and that if there is a serious call, that we're all communicating. But we do have the interoperability capability that's in place. We don't have a different radio system. We're all on that same communication plan.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Chief Washington. And the next question is, could you describe the nature of the training of your sworn officers? Would you say that they have at least the same level of training, if not more, than other sworn officers?
Chief,
sure.
Washington.
Thank you. Thank you for that question, sir. The Leech Lake Tribal Police Department officers have the same equivalent training as required by us because of the Minnesota Post Board standards. So therefore, if you attend Hibbing, you go to Alex Tech, all of our law enforcement officers are required to meet the same credentials prior to becoming a law enforcement officer with the Leech Lake Tribal Police Department due to the fact that it's mandated by Post Board. Some of our staff have other training that's above and beyond that. A couple of our staff here, we've also attended the Bureau of Indian Affairs Indian Police Academy, and then I've also returned back to the tribe here to complete our post-reciprocity exams. So we have several different trainings out there, but they're all in compliance with the Minnesota Post Board. We also have a couple of our narcotics investigators that have FBI status for special Title 18 in regards to submitting cases to the U.S. Attorney's Office as well. So that's part of our Headwater Safe Trails Task Force participating.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm very satisfied.
Very well. Thank you, sir. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bethelman, for bringing this bill. I mean, I just think about the historical implications here when we have sovereign nations being told that they're not allowed to govern and police their nations independently from not even another sovereign nation, but from a county. I just think it's incredible that we're still having this conversation in 2021, knowing what we know about our history in this country. And I always point to the fact that we have so many federally recognized sovereign nations in the state of Minnesota, and to hear this rhetoric really concerns me about some of the concerns that are being raised. And just to speak to the mutual aid agreements, we don't require some of our other police entities to have these mutual aid agreements. They have the ability to police at will. And so it really sounds to me like a paternalistic, a very, very paternalistic approach to this, a marginalized approach to this. And I'm just really concerned about the rhetoric. I hope we all support this bill and move it forward. It clears up some of the things that we should have cleared up a long time ago, and it helps rectify some historical ills that we still continue to have in this country. So I just wanted to make that statement.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Johnson and Representative O'Neill, and then we're going to move to vote, members.
Chair Mariani, Chief Washington, Chairman Jackson, I want to thank you. Your department that I've looked into is fantastic. I've worked with a number of tribal police departments as a peace officer, and they are very highly trained, highly skilled, very professional departments. I have nothing against those departments. They will do what's right. The issue is when it comes into the court system, that's what needs to be taken care of. And that needs to be what's decide where the charges go, what charges go, which court system. The departments are fantastic. I've never had a bad officer that I've worked with in the tribal departments I've worked with.
And I want to thank you for the highly trained officers you have. They do a fantastic job. But like I say, it's not the department. It's the next step afterwards with the charging that needs to be just dealt with before this goes forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to be supportive. I'm just concerned about what's in the letter from the chiefs, and I'm wondering if the chiefs are actually here to testify. Their letter to me is a little confusing, and so I'm wondering if they could explain, maybe testify in person, help us understand their objections. Thank you.
I don't know if there are chiefs here. If anyone is here, we can certainly pipe up and I'll recognize them. I'm scanning through the list. I'm not recognizing. And you're talking about the Minnesota Police Chiefs Association.
Oh, that? I apologize. I misspoke. It's the Sheriff's Association.
Oh, okay. Very
maybe
well.
Bill Hutton or someone else from the Sheriff's Association.
Anyone here from the Sheriff's?
Grace, are you on the call?
I'm not seeing anyone from the Sheriff's here, Representative O'Neill.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's so unfortunate. When they send a letter at the last minute and we barely have time to digest it, and then they're not here to testify, that's problematic for me. So that's really unfortunate. I really wish they had reached out earlier with their concerns, or at least been here to testify with their concerns. We obviously care about both the Chiefs and Sheriff's Associations, and in this case, the Sheriff's Association just sent a last minute letter voicing their concerns. I'm not, you know, in the beginning of the letter, it literally says this issue is more complicated than it would appear. Well, Sheriff's Association, if this is more complicated than it would appear, then you need to be here to make it clear. So that's my ask. I'm inclined to support this bill moving forward. Obviously, we want to give the due respect where it is deserved. And I am from that area. Like I said many times, I grew up in Clearwater County, which is just a hop, skip, and a jump from there. I appreciate the work that's been done. I appreciate the relationships that are already established there. So, and basically, unless the sheriffs want to show up and testify in person, I'll be supporting this bill today.
Very well. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Chair Becker-Fenn, you get the closing thoughts here before we move to a vote.
Thank you,
Chair Mariani.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wants to say something. Chairman Jackson.
Thank you. I'm sorry for interrupting. I'll just be real brief. I just want to reiterate, our LLBO has a good working relationship with Cass County. You know, we had some good MOUs that we currently are involved in partnership with, and it's been really going well. You know, we have some Cass County staff that are working, you know, from Walker in our tribal government building here, and they've been there for I don't know how many years now, and they're you know, we really enjoy them being a part of our tribal government staff. You know, and I know Cass County also had some court proceedings in our tribal courts, you know, it's been a pretty good relationship here, you know, and we just kind of want to continue to build on that. You know, we got a very diverse work group, tribal police, you know, there's a lot of good things that are happening, you know, that's what we want to build on, is some good, open, transparent working relationships, you know, and we've always been good partners with our surrounding counties, and we just want that to grow. And that's why this is so important for us in our tribal police department.
Thank you, Chairman. That's so good to hear. I do appreciate your collaborative leadership approach on such a fundamentally important core issue of any government, which is to provide for the public safety for her people. Chair Becker-Fenn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do want to thank Chairman Jackson for being available for this. You know, it's not every day that we have a tribal chairman testifying in a committee. And so I want to thank him and Chief Washington, as well as Commissioner Harrington, for making this a priority today. A couple things I wanted to touch on. One, as the Judiciary Chair, you know, we haven't seen any bills bringing up any kind of problems or things that need to be addressed regarding our, the relationship between our district courts and our tribal courts. Would be happy to have that discussion if there's something that needs to be done, but I think the fact that no bill's been brought forward, I'm not sure where that's coming from. I will also note that several years ago, the city of Cass Lake, which is located in the heart of Leech Lake Nation, was no longer able to fund their police department. And during that time, the residents of that city, we were so grateful and very lucky to have the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe providing law enforcement services to that area. And, you know, that's how it actually works in practice, is that if another, you know, when the city wasn't able to provide those services to residents anymore, the tribe stepped up to protect people, because that's their job. And finally, I just want to say that, frankly, we shouldn't need a test case to provide these, to treat tribal nations with the same respect that we treat a county. And to you know, I thank Vice Chair Frazier for bringing that up, because we shouldn't even be here. We should have already been treating our tribal nations with the respect that they deserve as sovereign nations. And so, you know, this bill is only relating to Leech Lake. And as has been mentioned, they provide those services. They are more than trained and ready to serve, and have been serving the people of this area. And as Chairman Jackson said, very, very grateful to those officers for the service that they provide to everybody who lives within the tribal boundaries, and would just ask for your support today for this very important bill.
Thank you, Chair Beckerfin. I will add that, you know, as a Twin Cities Metro resident, we're pretty accustomed to large police departments and other, you know, public safety personnel. And so one of the humbling things for me as a state legislator, and I'm constantly being reminded, including this committee, is how diverse and big our state is. And so we do have communities with far smaller, you know, departments and capacities. And so in addition to the equity issues and the sovereignty issues and the professionalism that exists in these Indian community police departments, there's also the need for across the board for everyone, you know, a strong collaboration. And so that's why it's really encouraging to hear that this proposal is coming forward within the context of keeping a high standard relative to collaboration across all communities. Very well. With that, the chair renews his motion that House File 1378 be referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Frazier.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier, aye. Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Johnson, nay. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grossel, excused. Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Aye.
Representative Cleavorn, aye. Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Lucero.
Yes.
Representative Lucero, aye. Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes yes.
Representative Mueller, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Representative Novotny, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, aye.
Representative O'Neill, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Raleigh, aye. Representative Vang?
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Zhang?
Aye.
Representative Zhang, aye. That concludes roll call with 17 ayes and one nay.
Very well. With 17 ayes and one nay, the motion prevails, and House File 1378 is referred to the General Register. Thank you, Chair Beckerfin. Thank you, Chairman Jackson and Chief Washington, for a good debate, a good bill before us. Thank you to the members for a good discussion as well. Members, before we move on to House File 1762, which is Representative Hollins, I just want to clarify the issue about the agenda, because I thought about it, and I, you know, since we're on the record, I do not want us to leave the impression with the public that we're having a meeting with an unposted agenda. The formal agenda has been posted, as all our agendas are, within the appropriate timelines that we set to do that for the sake of transparency. So our agenda has been out there in the public for that appropriate period of time. What Representative Johnson was referring to is the annotated agenda, which is a very helpful instrument for committee members because it identifies things like who's testifying, you know, the types of amendments, et cetera. Members, I am certainly committed to continuing that practice. I also want to let members know that that's not a requirement. That's a courtesy and a best practice that this chair and many other chairs commit to. It certainly is appropriate for members to ask, hey, where's the annotated agenda? We got used to that. We use that. Absolutely. But I do want to make sure that the public knows that there's no violation of the vital important public posting of agendas that really reflects the high standards that this body holds itself to. I'm also told that the letters that Representative Johnson referred to are now posted. With that, members, we're going to move to House File 1762, Representative Hollins. And Representative Hollins, I believe your motion is to refer House File 1762 to the General Register. Representative Hollins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is my motion. And I also have an author's amendment that I would like to introduce.
Very well. The Representative Hollins, House File 1762 is before us, and Representative Hollins is moving to amend with an author's amendment, the A1 amendment, puts the bill in the shape that the author wishes it to be before us, and then we'll discuss the full contents. Representative Johnson, are you okay with a voice vote on the author's amendment?
Yes, I am.
Very well. Thank you, sir. All in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the and House File 1762 is amended with the A1 amendment. Representative Hollins, your amended bill is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. Bill 1762 is policy to regulate the use of no-knock warrants. This language really seeks to strike a balance between law enforcement's need to sometimes move with the element of surprise and the citizen's right to reside safely in their own homes. For those of you who don't know, and I'm guessing most of us here know, that a no-knock warrant allows law enforcement to enter a property without any immediate prior notification to the residents, like knocking or ringing a doorbell. And they're typically issued under the belief that evidence that they hope to find would be destroyed during the time that a police would use to identify themselves and secure the area, or in the event where there is a perceived threat to officer safety during the execution of the warrant. This practice really got started during the war on drugs, and it has increased substantially over time. The use of no-knock warrants is disproportionately executed in Black and Brown communities, and they are dangerous to citizens and law enforcement alike. There's data collected that shows that no-knock warrants have led to the death of 81 citizens and 13 officers just between 2010 and 2016. And I think the really high-profile case of Breonna Taylor last summer is a perfect example of that situation, where an officer went to an incorrect location, had executed a no-knock warrant, and the folks inside believed that they were under attack and started shooting. And all of this could have been avoided if they were able to just knock on the door and let folks know that they were coming in. I would also state that no-knock warrants conflict with the right to self-defense and stand your ground laws that are very important to the Second Amendment, important to a lot of our citizens here in the state of Minnesota. So short of banning no-knock warrants altogether, this bill really seeks to better regulate and track this controversial law enforcement tool. I've communicated with stakeholders on both sides of the issue, and to be perfectly honest, neither side is entirely satisfied with the legislation, but I do think this is a really good start to confining when and where this tool can be used, and also to get more data about how frequently it is used. I have three testifiers here with me today, if we can hear all three, but if not, we'll limit it to just two. Mr. Chair, would you like me to introduce the testifiers, or would you like to?
Representative Hollins, I have Michelle Gross, Carlotta Madison, and Jonathan McClellan. Is that your list?
That is my list. We'll have Michelle Gross go last. She's the extra one at this point. So Jonathan McClellan would be our primary testifier.
Terrific. Jonathan McClellan, if you can come forward and state your name for the record and give us your testimony, we greatly appreciate it. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Jonathan McClellan. I am a retired Minneapolis firefighter, retired due to an injury in the line of duty saving a young man's life. I am the president of the Minnesota Justice Coalition and law student at the University of St. Thomas. I would like to thank this committee for giving me an opportunity to share with you today. I would like to thank Representative Hollins for carrying this important piece of legislation that will help reform our criminal justice system by protecting the community and public servants alike with best practices. Shortly after midnight on March 13th, 2020, three Louisville police officers dressed in plain clothes knocked on a door before forcing entry using battering ram. Officers said that they announced themselves as police before forcing entry. Police then fired 32 rounds into the apartment during two flurries of waves of shots separated by 1 minute and 8 seconds. Breonna Taylor, a 26-year-old African-American woman, was fatally shot in her apartment by Louisville Metro Police Department. Taylor was struck by 5 or 6 bullets in the hallway and pronounced dead at the scene. The death of Breonna Taylor has sparked public outrage around this issue of no-knock warrants. In the fall of 2020, the city of Louisville agreed to pay Taylor's family $12 million and reform police practices. However, none of the officers involved in the raid have been charged in Breonna's death. As for the settlement, I can assure you the family does not care about the money. They would happily give it all back and then some to have Breonna with us today. In November 2020, Minneapolis Mayor Fry and Chief Arredondo announced a new no-knock warrant policy. Under the policy shift, no-knock raids are not ended, but police officers will instead have to announce their presence as they enter premises and keep doing so periodically while they are inside. Fry and Arredondo said on average year, the police department executes 139 no-knock warrants, which is about 3 per week. In the United States in the 1980s, courts have granted 1,500 no-knock warrants a year. This is about 30 per state. In 2010, the figure was 60,000 to 70,000 a year, an average of 1,400 per state. Between 2010 and 2016, at least 94 civilians and 13 police officers died in no-knock raids. The searches are often for narcotics. Those killed during searches are disproportionately persons of color and poor, such as Lillian West and Lloyd Smalley, two African-American elders who were killed by smoke inhalation when the Minneapolis Police Department set their home on fire with a flashbang grenade while executing a no-knock raid on their home. The information justifying the no-knock warrant turned out to be incorrect, as no drugs, guns, or any other sign of criminal activity were found. A no-knock search warrant was executed on Larry Lee Armin's home in St. Paul. Armin's two children were on the main level in the line of fire when SWAT team barged unannounced into their home. The family's two dogs were shot and killed by the police during the encounter. The search warrant was for weapons and drugs in the home. The officers claimed that they were in fear of their safety. They thought that they entered a dangerous situation. Clothing, a glass pipe, and suspected marijuana remnants and a metal grinder, however, were the only items that were taken during the raid. On the night of February 16th, 2010, 18 officers executing a search warrant on an apartment based on a tip that narcotics were being sold at the address by someone named David Connolly. In what was called a cascading series of errors, a Minneapolis SWAT team smashed down the door with a battering ram without warning. The search warrant police had obtained required officers to announce themselves before entering. The police had applied for a no-knock warrant but did not get it. Police insisted they shouted search warrant before knocking down the door. According to police reports, a grenade was dropped on the floor. The individual whose house was served with this no-knock warrant was arrested on a misdemeanor for having a disorderly house, but never charged. The city had to pay $1 million in damages. With her six kids and husband asleep in bed after midnight, Yi Mua, age 29, was watching TV in her living room when she heard voices. Then came the sound of a window shattering. She bolted upstairs where her husband, Vang Kang, grabbed his shotgun from a closet and fired a warning shot through his door as he heard footsteps coming up his stairs. 22 bullets were fired back at him by the family's count. The gunmen, it turned out, were the members of the Minneapolis SWAT team that had raided the wrong address because of bad information from an informant, a mistake that some critics say happens all too frequently and gets innocent people killed. Mua said she has six kids and it only took one mistake to take one of her children's lives, and that she would never forget that. If cops can perform no-knock raids incorrectly or with bad information, and even if the case has merit, often the family has no redress under the rule of qualified immunity. Another bill I hope we address. The alternative, if law enforcement's officers are shot by an individual who are exercising their Second Amendment right to defend themselves on a no-knock raid served incorrectly, begs the question how this tragedy can be avoided. Imagine sleeping at home. The next thing you know, the door is smashed in, bullets are flying, and a woman laying on the bed is shot with 5 to 6 bullets hitting her body, killing her. Breonna Taylor did not have to die. Who is responsible if an officer is killed by a person protecting their home, or if there is another Breonna Taylor? As a modern day society, there is a more efficient way to do this, and it does not involve no-knock raids. The police departments need to evolve. We need to identify best practices and make policy changes for the greater good of all Minnesota. It is the state of Minnesota's job to make the tough decisions that protect the public and ensures justice is done in a courtroom. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McPollin, for your testimony, and also thank you for your service to the public as a firefighter and your work as a professional firefighter. Representative Hollins, I'm looking at a long list of people and several amendments, and I'm pressed for time on a policy deadline date. So I will ask all the testifiers to be extremely brief. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to act on this bill, and it's certainly my desire to do that. Representative Hollins, you have another testifier you wish to call on?
Yes, Chair, I apologize.
No apology needed.
I believe it is Ms. Carlotta Madison.
Very well.
Yes,
Carlotta Madison. Please identify yourself and give us your hopefully very brief, but no doubt very good testimony.
Okay, I'll keep it very brief.
Thank you.
My name is Carlotta Madison. Thank you for having me. I appreciate that very much, being here today to talk about House File 1762. I just want to come from the aspect of being a victim of a no-knock warrant. My brother Andre Madison was at a residence when the no-knock warrant was served. He did not understand that it was police officers coming through the door. He thought he was being burglarized, or he couldn't imagine what was going on. And then the only time he had a clue that it was police officers is when he seen the flashlights. He hit the floor at that time, but he was still injured because they threw a flashbang grenade in the back of the house. And so the officers in the front of the house thought someone was shooting at them. So they started shooting. And then they began to shoot at each other. And my brother was caught in the middle of the crossfire. He was shot in the neck and in the arm. He did survive, but he had become disabled as a result and later died of the, you know, as of the results of some of the injuries. So what happened to my brother was horrific. And it was based on an informant that said he had bought a $5 bag of marijuana from that place. And they came in and they shot at each other. An officer was shot, and he ended up being okay because of his bulletproof vest. But it was a very chaotic scene. It ended up on police various videos, and it was just horrific for our family. There was a woman and her children upstairs. She ended up taking her kids and getting in the bathtub because of it started out with over 500 rounds of gunfire. And so if he had known it was the police, I believe all of this could have been avoided. And I'm going to end it there to keep my testimony brief. Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Thank you, Ms. Madison, for being with us here today, for sharing the painful story of your family. And I'm sorry for your loss, and appreciate your presence with us today. Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since we're short on time, I will keep it there, and I am open to questions, and I believe there's some public testimony as well.
There is. We have three individuals for public testimony. I'm going to ask each of them to be as brief as possible to help out the committee to be able to get its work done on this bill today. We'll begin with Sarah Murtada of Doc First Minnesota. If you can identify yourself and give us your brief testimony, I'd appreciate it.
Good afternoon. My name is Sarah Murtada. I'm a law student at the University of St. Thomas and part of the Community Justice Project. As a Minnesotan and American, I believe strongly in the Second Amendment right to bear arms and the Fourth Amendment right to privacy. No-knock warrants clearly infringe upon these constitutional rights. No-knock warrants that don't allow individuals to answer the door endanger the lives of community members who believe that their houses are being illegally broken into and who may respond with violence, not realizing that it is law enforcement breaking into their homes. Members of the community who respond with violence and utilize their Second Amendment right to bear arms also cause a dangerous situation for the officers who are executing these warrants. The 2019 incident with Officer Matthew Rittner is just one example of a law enforcement officer who was shot and killed during the execution of one of these no-knock warrants. In addition to the large risk of human life, no-knock warrants also result in significant liability for communities who are then required to pay large settlements when no-knock warrants are incorrectly or poorly executed. No-knock warrants create an inherently dangerous situation for all parties involved. They infringe on Second and Fourth Amendment rights and also have a high financial cost associated with them. For these reasons, I strongly support this bill because it'll limit their use to only the most serious crimes. Thanks for your time and allow me to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Murtada. Thank you for your both excellent and concise testimony. Next, we have William. We have John Troy. I hope I pronounced that correct. Who I believe is also with NAC First Minnesota. Please come forward, identify your name for the record, and give us your very concise testimony. Welcome.
Good morning. My name is John Tro, and I am a law student researching no-knock warrant use in Minnesota with the Community Justice Project of the University of St. Thomas School of Law. Today, I just wanted to reiterate one of the events that Mr. McClellan touched on January 25th, 1989, Lillian Weiss and Lloyd Smalley, two African-American elders, were killed by smoke inhalation when the Minneapolis Police Department accidentally set their home on fire with a flashbang grenade while carrying out a no-knock raid on their home. The information supporting the no-knock warrant turned out to be incorrect, as no drugs, guns, or any other sign of criminal activity were found. I think this is just one example of a no-knock tragedy in Minnesota, but it is important to revisit it to understand how deadly such raids can be. I believe the proposed regulation will increase safety for both civilians and law enforcement, and ask that you support it. If you'd like more references to other instances of when no-knock warrants went wrong in Minnesota, I would be happy to send them to you. Thank you for your time and service.
Thank you so much, Mr. Cho, for your testimony and for you and your group's work on researching public policy in this area. Next, we have William Blair Anderson, Chief of Police for the City of St. Cloud. Chief, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
William Blair Anderson, Chief of Police, City of St. Cloud. Thank you, Chairman Mariani and members of the committee. And I too will be brief in the interest of time.
Thank you.
I would invite this body to look at the flip side in that we treat no-knock warrants with the reverence that they deserve. We understand the gravity of same. And I can tell you from my 25 years of experience in law enforcement, including time as an undercover narcotics agent, that we use a threat assessment. And that threat assessment is given to us by the National Tactical Officers Association. And there are great many variables involved in that. It is very comprehensive. And I would also invite this body to remember that any search warrant, no knock or not, has to be signed, has to be reviewed and signed by a judge. I am opposed to this bill because it is dangerous and it is going to create an exponentially higher level of danger in an already inherently dangerous profession. Now, we ask no quarter. We gladly step into harm's way for perfect strangers, but our job is to preserve life and safety and peace. And this bill greatly prohibits our ability to do that. And I'm going to give a quick example. The way the bill's written and that I understand it is that possession of drugs is something that would prohibit us from being able to obtain a no-knock warrant. Let me give you a quick example. And I've had this happen to me many times. Someone gets several pounds of a controlled one, a Schedule I controlled substance mailed to their house through the mail. The way this bill is written, we would not be able to apply for a no-knock warrant. But in my career, I don't know anybody that has a kilo and a half of a Schedule I controlled substance for personal use. Additionally, in my career, wherever there are drugs, there are guns. And I would invite you all to take a look at the threat assessment that we use. Again, it is very comprehensive and it involves all kinds of things, including criminal history, propensity to use violence, propensity to use firearms. And what I think potentially could happen if this bill passes, we are going to start seeing many, many great law enforcement professionals walking away, and who could blame them? We are simply unnecessarily putting them in harm's way. And this is one of our most effective tools that we use. And I cannot overstate that we do treat this with the proper reverence that it deserves. And so I would invite this body to focus on the threat and not simply the crime that we are investigating, because possession often snowballs into other crimes. I don't know anybody that has 3 pounds of any controlled substance for personal use. That smacks of distribution. And how do drug dealers protect their entity, their enterprise of distribution, usually with firearms? Additionally, and then I'll stop after this, all of that information is contained in our search warrant affidavit that again is reviewed and signed by a judge. And so we don't haphazardly apply for no-knock search warrants. A lot of thought and a lot of methodology goes into that process. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to the committee for allowing me this time to testify.
Thank you, Chief Blair Anderson, for taking the time to testify. And thank you, sir, for your service to the people of St. Cloud and to the people of Minnesota. Representative Hollins, there's a lot there. We're going to have a debate for sure. We're going to have to move it along, however. There are amendments, and I think the wisest thing would be to take these amendments up and discuss them as quickly as possible, vote on them, and then return to the main issues of the bill. If that's okay with you, then I'd like to call forward the A2 amendment and inquire who's going to offer the A2 amendment.
That would be Representative Navani, Chair Mariani.
Very well. Representative Navani moves adoption of the A2 amendment. Representative Navani, to your amendment.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and I would like to thank Representative Hollins for bringing this issue forward, and I really appreciate the A1 amendment that she did, and after speaking with House Research and things, most of the issues that caused the greatest concerns about the restrictions from the bill are addressed with this A1 amendment. But as Chief Anderson said, my concern is that the bill is worried. The bill is listing all of the crimes that they're investigating and not the threat level. Let me be clear. There is no acceptable mistakes in this situation. We've seen the mistakes that have happened and how costly and devastating it is to the community, how damaging it is to the trust in the police departments and the law enforcement agencies that execute these search warrants. I believe that the current Lexapol policies and guidelines have gone to great length to eliminate the chances of mistakes and addressing the current situation that we're talking about. I have no control, and Lexapol does not have control over things that happen in other states, but the characterization that no-knock warrants in Minnesota are frequent and on the rise, I think they're very rare, especially in the outstate. And should they be even rarer? Yes. I hate to take away the possibility of using it in some situations where it is justified. As one who has been on many no-knock search warrants, especially back in the era of meth labs, very dangerous situations. Booby traps, as Chief Anderson said, weapons at the ready. They weren't usually worried about police response. They were worried about getting ripped off by other criminals. So that is the spirit that I offer the A2 amendment in, and I hope you vote yes.
Thank you, Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and thank you, Representative Novotny. Looking at the A2 amendment, I'm not necessarily opposed to what you're doing. I actually think that it kind of contradicts what the A1 amendment does, which was to remove those specific crimes in which it could or could not be used, and instead focuses more on the application and showing that it's necessary, and then also the tracking. So just to that point, I had a really great conversation with Bill Hutton at the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. And, I think to your point, they are not used frequently in greater Minnesota, but we don't have statistics and the information about how often they are used that's publicly available, which is why we wanted to include that in this. If it is used as infrequently as we assume they are, then I think what we currently have with the A1 amendment will provide good feedback about how frequently they're used and also good constraints on when no-knock warrants can be issued. So I appreciate what you're trying to get at with the A2. I actually think the A2 amendment might constrain this even further than the A1 does. So I would ask folks to not support it. Thank you.
You're welcome. And so it sounds like possible continuation of conversations, perhaps, between you two. Very well. Representative Donovan moves adoption of the A2 amendment. The clerk will take the roll on the motion.
Chair Mariani.
Representative
Bobby. I think this is a reflection of how it would be better if we all worked together and could do this in person. As I said, this was my amendment was written in absence of collaboration with Representative Holland's amendment. Maybe we can work on just a little bit better clarifying language. I withdraw my amendment at this time.
Well, thank you, Representative Bobby. I do think it was a good spirit, a good intention. When I saw the amendment, I had the same thoughts that Representative Hollins had, that I think there's some room here. And I do apologize. I'm obviously trying to move quickly, trying to get our other two bills heard before policy deadline here. Representative Hollins, I do hope you take Representative Botany up on his offer to work on this issue together.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
Very well. Representative Botany removes the A2, withdraws rather the A2 amendment. We do have the A3 amendment. Is anyone offering the A3 amendment?
The A3 amendment is also mine, Chair Mariani.
Very well. Representative Devotney moves adoption of the A3 amendment. Representative Devotney.
And once again, this is thing to just to make it better. And I believe with the current change in laws with, or the current change in technology and body worn cameras that are available. I think this is an important protection for everyone that are involved in this. I have noticed some problems in the language that I would like to clear up. Originally, having everyone wear a body worn camera that is on one of these no-knock warrants, I think would go to a great lengths to, as I said, protect everyone. My concern with the language as it is written right now is that the possibility that if they don't work, it's an electronic device, they're not 100%. So that everyone has one and is activated. I do not want some officer that bumps a button twice or has it not recorded to be prosecuted for not following the statute. So I withdraw that amendment also.
Representative Otney withdraws the A3 amendment. I do hope, Representative Otney, that you and Representative Holland could also work on this issue. I find the proposal attractive for a number of reasons, but I know that there are certainly capacity issues as well, with many of our departments. But I do hope you continue to work on this language. There is the A4 amendment. Is anyone offering the A4 amendment?
Chair Mariani, that is my amendment, but I'd like to speak first on the last amendment that was withdrawn.
Well, Representative Johnson, toward the end, if we can, but I'd like to keep us moving at a good clip here. Why don't we do this amendment, and then I'll call on you to speak to that. Is that all right?
Oh, okay. This amendment, just the A4 amendment, just changes from instead of reporting quarterly to reporting yearly, and changing the date that and they need to be reported by January 15th, so we have a report to the legislature by February 1st. I know in my area, I've talked to a number of sheriffs and police departments across a good swath of my area, not just in my county, but others, and they do 0 to 2 no-knock warrants a year in each of the counties I've talked to. And with quarterly reporting, it's a lot more reporting than would be required.
Okay. So Representative Johnson moves adoption of the A4 amendment. Representative Hallett's in response.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and thank you, Representative Johnson. Really, when I look at this amendment, I am very torn, I'll be honest. In my conversations with Bill Hutton, he did tell me, in certain, especially in greater Minnesota, you might not use a no-knock warrant, but once or twice every couple of years. And so I don't want this to be unduly burdensome to our law enforcement agencies. I think my primary concern would be where they're used more frequently. And I would like to see that data provided more often. I think that we could potentially work on this wording and include something about if you don't have anything to report, then you don't have to report or something like that. But at this time, I would prefer to keep it as quarterly reporting. So I am going to oppose this amendment, although I do understand the spirit in which it was offered.
Representative Johnson.
That's unfortunate. Even in my understanding, even in the metro area, the number of no-knock warrants has been reduced dramatically due to some policy changes. In fact, they said, if I remember correctly, the testifier said Minneapolis has stopped them almost completely. So the amount of the sheriffs and the police are going to be reporting nothing but zeros 4 times a month generally. And it's going to be extra work for, I can't remember where the reporting is too offhand, but it's going to be a lot of reporting, a lot of work, especially for the state agencies compiling all this stuff with nothing but zeros.
Very well. We have Representative Novotny.
Chair, I'd like to reserve my comment for the panel vote.
Very well. All right, so I We're ready to vote then on the A4 amendment. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani, we can just do a voice vote.
Okay, very well. Thank you, Representative Johnson. So all in favor of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
No.
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 Motion does not prevail, and the A4 amendment is not adopted. Representative Hollins, this one too, I hope that we can spend some time looking at this. I think there are some, meritous thoughts relative to this amendment, but hopefully we'll have more time to be able to do that. All right, members, so we have the House File 1762 before us as amended, discussion on the bill. Representative Otney, followed by Representative Pinto, Representative Long, and then Representative Johnson. Representative Otney.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. As I just want to say, I do see several things that are of great merit and would be an aid for safety and to the general public and law enforcement and to help reestablish that broken trust that we have. I hope that we can work towards that and come up with some amendments to satisfy everyone's group. I'll be against it now. I hope we can vote for that in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Otney. Representative Johnson, I did forget that I was going to ask you after the other amendment. You wanted to comment on the prior amendment. And so
I can do that on my final comments.
Oh, okay. Very well, then. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hollins, for advancing this. I guess I just wanted to address some of the concerns expressed by Chief Anderson, and we had a chance to work together just a little bit or with his team when I did some training in St. Cloud, and I really appreciate his expertise and testimony here. But I guess I'm a little bit concerned. I just want to make sure that we're talking about the bill as amended that's in front of us. There was the comment that a no-knock warrant cannot be used when the only crime alleged is drug possession. I just want to point out that if we have the situation the chief was describing where there is a significant quantity and the chief said, in that case, you really kind of know logically that there is in fact selling or distribution that's going on. Well, then in that case, this would not apply. This is very explicitly when the only crime alleged is drug possession. In that case, you'd have something broader going on. And beyond that, it seems to me the rest of the bill is really just making very clear so that there is the appropriately high standard, as we've heard from a number of testifiers, to make sure that in fact that less invasive means or methods cannot be used. It's not prohibiting them, but it is saying that there should be this high standard met for judicial review. So I appreciate the comments, but I guess it seems to me that the bill as amended, in fact, is really laying out a path to make absolutely certain that these are used in a safe set of circumstances. And I also just want to note that of the amendments, the first amendment that was withdrawn would in fact limit the bill even further, would have done so. Then there was the point about body cameras and the point about the reporting requirements. So even looking at the amendments, I'm not quite sure what the concern otherwise is. I know there'll be ongoing conversations, but I appreciate Representative Hollins that you've brought this forward in a way to try to really reform something, which we've heard a lot that shouldn't be used very often. We want to make sure there's a high standard, and that's what this bill does. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. And I do want to acknowledge, and part of it is my wanting to push the forward, but I had the same thought about, your first point. And it's always very important that that was made on the record. Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to rise in support of the bill for Representative Hollins and appreciate her bringing this really important topic before us today. I represent part of the city of Minneapolis, and Chief Arredondo and Mayor Fry have pushed for this policy and adopted something that is, I think, in line with the goals of this bill in our city to really limit the use of no-knock warrants to those extremely high-risk situations where we know that there would be potential imminent threat of physical harm. And I think those are the situations where this is appropriate. And as we've heard, there's a lot of risk in having these no-knock warrants, I think, go beyond those types of circumstances. And so we're not taking away the tool. We're really trying to focus the tool on the circumstances where it is most needed and where there is a clear risk of harm. And I checked in with the city this week to see how the policy was going, and they said it's been well received by the officers, and that the goal really is to say to protect both the officers and the members of the public. And so I just want to support Representative Hollins's bill.
Thank you, Representative Long. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, members, I want to mention on the camera issue, actually the Lexi Pool policy actually already has in it that in high-risk warrants, video cameras, when at all possible, will be used. So that's already taken care of in policies that 85 of the 87 sheriffs use and many of the cities use already. I do have some concerns with this bill and some concerns with the testimony I was hearing. I myself have been involved in well over 100 search warrants. A number of them were no-knock warrants. Not all, not very many, but a number of them were. And I've also had training in search warrants and no-knock search warrants. And I have never, ever heard of law enforcement in Minnesota not announcing on a no-knock search warrant when that door is breached. It is training, training, training. They do it continuously. The search teams that we have, that is the training they do across the state, because they are the ones that, our search teams are the ones that actually on those high-risk warrants do the initial breach. Very highly trained. They are training, most search teams are training monthly on those situations, and they hope they never have to do that. We also clears up some of the testimony that was brought forth, reference Breonna Taylor. I actually read the reports and read the final outcome of the report. Yes, the press was right. It was a no-knock search warrant, but the officers did knock. In fact, witnesses, including Mr. Walker, who was arrested for shooting the officer, admitted that they heard them knocking on the door. And the one officer that was shot in the leg, if I remember correctly, was shot just as the door was opening or through the door as the door was opening. It's unfortunate the press doesn't always fill us in on all the true details. Now, I do have other concerns on this bill. It's going to make it, I think it's going to actually make it less safe for the public. The people inside the building that where the search warrant is, and also less safe for the officer. I myself have obtained no-knock search warrants, and in order to do that, it's a very high bar to get it through the courts. You have to know exactly what's going on. You have to provide the courts and the judge with a lot of probable cause that is backed up with substantial proof of what's occurring. On a lot of the drug search warrants and a lot of the search warrants that are no-knock warrants, they know who the person is that's in that home. They generally know if there's firearms in there. And if that person in that home and they know there's firearms is banned from firearms by our current laws, what does he have a firearm for? He should not have one. It means he doesn't care about the laws. And those are situations where the no-knock warrants are used. The testimony about the person doing a warning shot through the door. You don't do a warning shot through a door. That's deadly force. I'm sorry about that. This bill is with the A1 amendment is better, but it's still a bad bill. I think it's going to be more dangerous to the public. The persons where the search warrant is going to be executed at, and more dangerous for the officers. And with that, I cannot support this bill at this time.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Members, we are at time. There are three or two others who wish to testify.
Chair Mariani.
Representative Johnson.
Because of the issues where we'd like to work on this bill and get it better, and Representative Novotny has offered, can I suggest just laying this bill over for now and see if we can get it wrapped up next week with some changes that could make this bill better, so where we can support it.
Representative Johnson, on any other date, that would be a great suggestion. I would take you up on it, but on deadline date, I'm afraid it's important for us to act one way or the other. We can still hopefully, you know, continue to work on this in some other format or some other venue. But I'd like to get us to a vote here today. We still have two other bills. I've been able to buy us a little bit of time. Hopefully we can get those bills in, but we need to get moving on this bill. Representative O'Neill.
Mr. Chair, I just have a quick procedural question. So I don't see a companion in the Senate. So I realize that today is first deadline and it's really important for us. What is the path for this in the Senate? And is there an author and is it going to be heard? I mean, what's the path over there?
Representative O'Neill, it's a fair question, although I will remind members that the House does not act dependent on how the other body acts. And so we have deadlines, so we try to meet them. Representative Hollins, I think Representative O'Neill is correct in terms certainly of asking the question whether or not there's any movement happening at this point in the other body. Representative Hollins.
Yes, I think that's a really fair question. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. It was just the Yellow Jackets were just recently sent over to Senator Fata. So he has told me that he is planning on dropping them and he is asking for a hearing. Beyond that, he's seeking co-authors, but beyond that, I don't know. And that was my fault. I waited a really long time to get them to him.
Thank you for your inquiry, Representative O'Neill. Representative Hollins, last thoughts here.
Just a couple of final thoughts. I'm hearing a lot of folks saying that there's already a good amount of work that goes into requesting these sorts of no-knock warrants. And if that is the case, then I don't think that this should be particularly cumbersome or an issue. If you already require probable cause, then enumerating it and codifying that in statute should be pretty simple. So I would strongly strongly request that folks support this, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. With that, Representative Hollins renews her motion that House File 1762 as amended is referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Mariani.
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Frazier. Vice Chair Frazier.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier, aye. Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Johnson, nay. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grossel, excused. Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Pass.
Representative Cleavorn, abstain. Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Lucero.
No.
Representative Lucero, nay. Representative Mueller.
Mueller votes no.
Representative Mueller, nay. Representative Novotny.
Novotny, no.
Representative Novotny, nay. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, no.
Representative O'Neill, nay. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston.
Poston, no.
Representative Poston, nay. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, no.
Representative Raleigh, nay. Representative Vang.
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Representative Zhang, aye. That concludes roll call with 10 ayes, 7 nays, and 1 abstention.
Very well. The motion prevails, and House File 1762, as amended, is referred to the General Register. Thank you. Representative Hollins, let's see if we can move these bills, members. I've been able to buy us a little bit of time. So first up, we have House File 1686, Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen, welcome to the committee. The chair moves to refer House File 1686 to the General Registry. Representative Hansen, your bill is before us.
Thank you, Chair. And yes, that is my motion to move House File 1686 to the General Register.
I will move quickly here, though this is an issue that does require us to take it very seriously. And I want to thank you for taking the time to hear Travis's law today. I'd like to take a minute to also thank Senators Abler and Hoffman for carrying our companion bill in the Senate. I'll provide a very brief overview and then turn it over to my testifier, Flo Ching. This bill has been introduced in honor and named for her son, Travis Jordan, who was killed on November 9th, 2018 during a mental health emergency. We also have with us Elliot Boutte from NAMI to offer support, their support and testimony, and Michelle Gross with UAPB available to answer technical questions. Members, Minnesota has built a nation-leading county-based mobile mental health crisis intervention team. We must ensure that 911 dispatchers are empowered by statute to utilize this amazing resource. The public has long wondered why crisis teams are not a common 911 response option. Families who call 911 and specifically request a response from a mental health professionals frequently report that they still get police-only responses. When a police-only contact leads to a newsworthy tragedy, the average person wonders why mental health professionals were not engaged. At the Ramsey County Emergency Communications Center, their staff has taken an unusual initiative to act on the existing permissive language of 403.03. And this is the kind of response the public wants to see become a standard practice. This bill does that while acknowledging the workforce issues that we face in the mental health community and the limitations that geography poses in many emergency situations. When someone is having a heart attack or is injured, EMTs and paramedics are the professionals that are dispatched, and they are the primary professionals managing the emergency. When someone's home is on fire, the firefighters are dispatched and are the primary professionals managing the crisis. I believe it is time that we intentionally empower our operators to dispatch our existing mental health crisis intervention teams when someone with a mental health emergency needs help and when it is appropriate to do so. Since 2010, 47 people have lost their lives at the hands of police during a mental health emergency. In the last 3 years alone, 13 people have been stolen from us, including Archer Amorosi, Billy Hughes, Kobe Heisler, Isaac Aiden, Nakia Moody, and Travis Jordan, and too many more. Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over now to our testifier, Flo Ching, to tell us more about her son, Travis Jordan.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Ms. Ching, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Chairman Mariani, members, and our bill author, Jessica Hansen, aloha. My name is Florine Jordan Ching, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of my late son, Travis Matthew Jordan, and his journey with mental illness. Travis was born and raised in Hawaii, where he grew up loving the ocean and where he is home now in the ocean. His passion was surfing and boogie boarding. After a terrible surfing accident, he was diagnosed with PTSD, bipolar, and anxiety disorder. He also suffered very serious health issues. On November 9, 2018, 311 was called for a wellness check because he was experiencing a bipolar episode. Instead of sending someone experienced in the mental health crisis, two officers with only 11 months on the Minneapolis police force was dispatched. They demonstrated no compassion, no empathy towards him or the situation. This should never have happened. As Travis's mom, the pain and the grief of this loss often knocks me to my knees. This has also devastated our entire family, his friends,
and other loved ones. Please pass this bill so no other family will ever have to experience this pain that you will never understand. Thank you again, and mahalo.
Thank you, Ms. Ching. You have our deep, heartfelt empathies and sympathies for your loss. Can't imagine a parent losing a child under any circumstances, much less this. Much blessings to your family, and we'll pray for healing for you and your family, and we'll work on this legislation together. Thank you, Ms. Ching. Elliot Butai from NABI is here. Mr. Butai, if you can state your name for the record and give us your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Members, my name is Elliot Butai, Criminal Justice Coordinator with NABI Minnesota. This bill is an important first step in building our full crisis response system in Minnesota. As Representative Hansen said, in most cities and counties, the 911 system is not connected to our already established crisis teams, teams of licensed mental health professionals with high standards that are set in statute. Instead, there are 40 different numbers across the state, depending on where you live. And there are some great partnerships happening, but mostly 911 and law enforcement are unaware of this resource. Even many mental health professionals don't have their local crisis number memorized. And the truth is, people in a mental health crisis shouldn't have to remember a different number than everyone else in an emergency. We have an infrastructure for responding to all other emergencies. 911 even has a clear procedure in connection to poison control. It's time to end this discrimination against people with mental illnesses and disabilities. We've increased quality training for police. Agencies across the state have adopted CIT training. We have many successful co-response teams and mental health units, but we'll never be able to adequately respond to mental health crises with the law enforcement response, because living with a mental illness is not a crime. We've even heard some recently of some departments that are deciding not to respond to suicide calls due to the perceived liability in the use of deadly force laws. Law enforcement absolutely play an important role in our emergency response system, but we can't continue asking them to fill a role they were never intended to. And I thank you for hearing this bill today, and Representative Hansen for carrying it. And we express our gratitude and love to Travis's family for their courage in sharing today. So we urge you to support this bill and continue building our mental health system, which is part and parcel of the public safety system. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Butai. Representative Hansen, we have, I don't believe we have any amendments. So we'll move to discussion then. We have four members who have asked to be recognized. We'll begin with Representative Hewitt.
Chair Mariani, I'd like to defer to go just before Representative Johnson.
Very well. Representative Hollins.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you, Representative Hansen, for bringing this. And Ms. Ching, mahalo nui noa for your important testimony. It was really beautiful. I am strongly in support of this legislation. I have family members who suffer from mental health illness, and we fear on a regular basis the police being called and not understanding the situation that they find themselves in. And I don't think that's something that anybody should have to live with. We have to build in structures that support all of our citizens and ensure that they are all safe. So I just want to express my strong appreciation for this legislation and for bringing this, Ms. Hansen. Thank you. Representative Hansen, sorry.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. Representative Feist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just also wanted to express my really strong support for this bill. It is both practical, we have the infrastructure there, and it is just really beneficial to the entire community, like Representative Hollins and like I'm guessing all of us. I have family members that struggle with their mental health. And I just believe that this is something that we as a society owe to those of us who struggle with mental health and mental illness. And like Mr. Butte said, he said, living with a mental illness is not a crime. And I just thought, like, I could not have said it better. We need to send mental health professionals when people are dealing with a mental health crisis. And this would free up law enforcement to focus on, you know, violent crimes, which is in their expertise. So I just strongly, strongly support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Feist. Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. I think it's a mischaracterization of the law enforcement response to these mental health calls. They're not responding to take people to jail. It's treated as a medical and understanding that situation. So often the police response is not the first call, they're the last call. The police are usually only called after the situation can't be controlled by family or friends. So what happens when these situations escalate into the dangerous situation with these response or with these responders there? Is there a plan for that, and how will this be dealt with?
And Representative Novotny, what you're directing your question to the author?
I guess the author or NAMI, I guess.
Okay, very well. Mr. Butte, perhaps you care to respond?
Representative Novotny, to clarify, you're asking, I'm sorry, could you clarify the question? I'm not sure that I totally understood.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. So Mr. Butte, as I said, the situation is already pretty serious, and usually out of the manageable situation for the family or the friends that they're called to start with. Am I understanding this right, that in this situation where it is out of control, now we'll call the medical responders, and are they going to be responding by themselves? And is there a plan that if they can't get the situation resolved, then, you know, if it continues to escalate, what's the plan then?
Mr. Butte.
Representative Novotny, I don't think that it should be seen that way, as we definitely are concerned with the safety of the crisis teams. And I think it is actually, there's a great variety of the types of calls that the crisis teams respond to, and I also think a great variety of calls that law enforcement respond to. So I think we know that there have been situations that have escalated from an initial call that wasn't actually that escalated, but still was kind of oriented around mental health. But also say that the crisis teams, they deal with serious issues all the time. And but there's also procedures, and you know, we could turn to Ramsey County, but I also am aware of other jurisdictions around the country that have created risk assessments and decision trees for 911 to decide. So it would be a pretty vetted situation. And we also see this, of course, moving with other efforts to give the dispatchers the training they need.
Representative Hansen, I believe you want to respond as well.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chair Mariani.
Yes, please. Yeah, I would like to, Chair, if I could ask Michelle with CUAPB to respond to this as well. I think that she would provide some very valuable insight to address Representative Novotny's question.
Always good to hear from Ms. Gross. Michelle Gross, please come forward.
Thank you, Chair Mariani and members. Yes, I just want to address that question. Our organization spent over 2 years writing an extensive white paper on this exact topic. And so I'm happy to answer that question. Representative Novotny, Minneapolis police, and I've had many meetings with Chief Arredondo and other senior leaders in the police, Minneapolis Police Department, for example, as well as other police chiefs in other areas. Right now, Minneapolis responds to roughly 6,500 of these calls a year. And almost none of them involve a weapon or any kind of serious matter where the family, you know, it's out of control and that sort of thing. The chief himself and senior leaders I've spoken to have said that they would prefer not to respond to these calls, but because of the way that 911 is hardwired to send those calls straight to the police, that's the reason that they're getting involved, because people don't know to call those other mental health crisis response unit phone number, you know, phone calls. And so for that reason, they keep on responding to things that frankly don't require the level of, you know, a law enforcement lens. And so what we were really trying to do with this bill is to let mental health professionals and practitioners be the primary responders, but they are certainly able to call in law enforcement if they need to. If there is a belief that the situation may be escalated, there could be a co-response where both law enforcement and mental health crisis responders can respond together. Law enforcement can clear the scene, and then the mental health crisis responder can take over. And so it does address the situation you're talking about, but the issue really comes down to, you know, the fact that because of the way things are hardwired now, police are being the primary responders in many instances where that frankly is just not necessary. And our studies show that best practices would be to empower 911 dispatchers to send those mental health crisis units as the primary responders in most of these situations.
Thank you, Ms. Gross. Representative Ivey?
Yeah, just thank you for that. And since everything seems to be based around Minneapolis today, with their 6,500 calls, is Minneapolis Fire going on those two with it being a medical? Do they respond the same way to all medicals, or how is that handled?
Ms. Gross, perhaps?
To our knowledge, at this point, Minneapolis Fire is not responding to those calls, typically. You know, if there's some known medical element, then there may be, but typically they are not responding to all of those calls, to the best of my knowledge.
Thank you, Ms. Gross. Members, we still have one more bill I want to get to. Representative Motney.
Oh, and if I may add, Chair Mariani, and to
Ms. Gross, very briefly.
Just very briefly. I recognize that the example I gave was Minneapolis, but we, you know, in our 87 counties in the state, every single county has a mental health crisis response unit. This is not a Minneapolis or St. Paul centric problem. This is a problem that happens all over the state, and the cases we work with are all over the state. So I want to make it clear that we're talking about something that needs to happen across the state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Gross. Representative Ivey, I believe you're done for now.
Yes, sir. I will take my hand down. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Good inquiry. Representative Hewitt, Representative Johnson, let's move to vote so we can get Representative Lucero's bill in. Representative Hewitt.
I'll try to go quick, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, I do support the bill as we've talked about, but I do have some reservations. As you know, I'm working on the EMS and what we're going to do to redesign this. And one of my biggest reservations is that this is a new level of response, and other states are doing it. We need to look at what they're doing and how it works. And also this level of response, when we have the government, the 911 centers, sending someone to a house, they need to be regulated because we're saying that's the best source. And so what I understand is that that's one of the problems here is we do not have a regulating body of these, what we would call the new first responders. So a couple reservations there that we really need to look at. I'm going to support the bill. I think that we need to get going on it, but also I need your advocates to help me on this as we go through this journey, because we do need to work on this. This is a very important, and levels of response are being added here. And even though I know they're trained, they're licensed, we're talking a whole nother thing. Every police officer is, every EMT is, but they need a regulatory body. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. And actually some echoes of Representative Ogney's question and concerns in that as well. Very wise advice, Representative Hansen and members. Representative
Chair Mariani.
Mr. Butai, to this point.
I'm sorry, I just didn't want to respond to Representative Hewitt.
Super brief.
Thank you. They are not considered, they're not professionalized like other first responders. They would, I think, welcome that because they do the similar work, but they are absolutely regulated. They are already going into people's homes, people that are suicidal. So they are practically doing this, but they're also triaging calls when it can be resolved on the phone. But when they have to go out, they're absolutely going out. So I just don't want to characterize it as something that's completely new. They have been around in Minnesota for many, many years and operating successfully.
Good clarification. Thank you, Mr. Boutte. Representative O'Neill, quickly, please.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So this doesn't have an enactment date, and I'm really concerned about how quickly this would go into effect, because obviously Minnesota is a very big state and it's very different from corner to corner. So at the very least, there needs to be an enactment date that's out into the future just a little bit, just as Representative Hewitt had some concerns. I have even greater concerns because the enactment date isn't listed, which means you know when that gets enacted. So that's immediate, as soon as upon signature, and that's a problem. So this bill has a big problem. I'm a no just for that one reason. That is a big oversight.
Good counsel, Representative O'Neill. Representative Hansen, I take it you're open to, assuming we move this bill, to working on a workable enactment date as an amendment?
Chair Mariani, absolutely. I think the biggest conversation we need to have here is not to get caught up in what we can't do in the legislative process. I think that we should focus on the lives we can save and the people that need this kind of intervention. I think that's really important. I don't think we should, you know, throw away the whole thing or not get behind this. We have two Republican Senate authors who are moving this forward actively in the House, or I'm sorry, in the Senate. And we have room to continue to grow on this. So I am absolutely, absolutely open to making an amendment to that. Anything we can do to make sure that we can continue to support these people that are going through this, because there is too many folks who are having a mental health emergency. And like we heard already, having a mental illness is not a crime. And we want to make sure we dispatch the appropriate professionals and empower all of our systems to honor the dignity and worth of people who are experiencing this. So that would be my comment on that. And absolutely, I am 100% available and open to making this as best as we possibly can.
Thank you. Thank you, colleagues here on both sides of the aisle to work with. Representative Johnson.
I'm sorry.
Mayor, Chair Mary.
I'm sorry. I really do need to move, Ms. Gross. I'd love to hear it.
I just don't
have the time. I really don't. Representative Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Hansen, I like the concept of this bill, but it needs a lot of work. And this bill, I believe, is going to general register. It cannot go there. It needs way too much work. I have a lot of concerns. We're hearing a lot of things about what's happening in Minneapolis and the issues there. The metro area, they have the population, they have the number of calls to justify teams 24/7, 365. 6,500 a day in Minneapolis is about 17 per day. In greater Minnesota, we don't have that. We don't have those many calls to justify hiring 8 people to be working full-time in order to cover 24/7, 365. We have multiple counties that have gotten together to put these teams together, but it could be up to a 2-hour delay before they can get there. That can't happen. And we also have the issue where if they're going to go there, they're going to want law enforcement there as well. But in my EMS, ambulances will not go to a scene in Minneapolis, and even sometimes up here, because their policies, they cannot go in until law enforcement has made it safe. In this area, I've done CPR for 35 minutes waiting for an ambulance. A person in mental crisis does not have an hour and a half, 2 hours to wait for help. Law enforcement has been dealing with this for years. And going back to a question Representative Novotny asked, Back in 1987, law enforcement forced the state mental health system in our area to put on a class to teach us how to deal with them, how to deal with them. And the instructors were going through telling us all these techniques and stuff, and we asked them a simple question. If those don't work, what do you do? We call law enforcement. And then he realized he was talking to law enforcement. We know there's an issue. We're doing our best to handle it the best way we can. These mental health crisis teams, they will not go to a call without law enforcement there. Other states have done this and they have been killed. We do not want that to happen. We want everybody, we want the person in crisis to be safe. We want the crisis interventions team to be safe. We want the other public around that person to be safe. And we want our law enforcement officers to be safe. This bill needs too much work. And this should not be going to the General Register. In fact, the Senate companion isn't in public safety. It's in health and human services. There's a lot of health and human services stuff that in this bill that needs to go there. So with that, I would suggest that we re-refer this bill to health and human services where these mental health unit teams are going to be set up and doing what they do. We also have a bill that we're hearing next week, 515, that deals with the dispatching and getting the qualifications and setting up a task force to figure out what these dispatchers need to be trained. We have a number of schools in the state that do training for dispatchers, but we need to get basic criteria, what they need to learn so they can send the right people to the right places. And with that, at this time, unless this bill is being referred to Health and Human Services, I cannot support it.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. The motion is to refer to General Register. Representative Hansen, I believe you've got a good bill. You're using language about where appropriate, providing direction to 911. I think it's a good first step. I really do. I think Representative O'Neill's point is highly important, and I would urge you to address that if this bill moves forward. Other members want to weigh in, but quite frankly, members, we don't have the time for that right now because we still have one more bill. The chair then moves to refer House File 1686 of the General Register, and the clerk will take the roll.
Mariani.
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Frazier.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frazier, aye. Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Johnson, nay. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grossel, excused. Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, aye.
Representative Cleavorn, aye. Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Lucero.
No.
Representative Lucero, nay. Representative Mueller.
Their votes, no.
Representative Mueller, nay. Representative Novotny.
Novotny, no.
Representative Novotny, nay. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, no.
Representative O'Neill, nay. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston.
Poston, no.
Representative Poston, nay. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, nay.
Representative Raleigh, nay. Representative Vang.
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Representative Zhang, aye. That concludes roll call with 11 ayes and 7 nays.
Very well. With 11 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 1686 is referred to the General Register. Representative Hansen, you've got some work to do on this bill, but thank you for bringing it forward. Members, we got a few seconds. I think we're not going to be able to vote on the next bill. My tack will be to lay this over and work with the author to see if we can build this into the omnibus bill. The author doesn't know that because I'm making this up as I'm going along because the clock is ticking, but I think it is important to hear the testimony on this. Representative Lucero moves to refer House File 464 to the General Register. Representative Lucero, your bill is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm in the awkward and unenviable position of standing, being the only one that stands between us and the weekend. So I will try and go as fast as I can here. Mr. Chair, I do have a DE, so I would move the DE1.
Very well. Representative Lucero moves adoption of DE1 amendment. Representative Johnson, you're okay with a voice vote? Voice vote.
That is correct.
Very well. All in favor of the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and House File 464 is adopted, amended with the DE1 amendment. Representative Lucero, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and trying to be as brief as I can. So we know that there's been conversations regarding law enforcement and holding those that make bad decisions accountable. I am one who strongly advocates for that position. And I introduced this bill, the original bill, last year, last session, when those conversations were occurring in this committee. And so this bill was a carryover. And the reason we just adopted the language or the DE is because portions of my original bill were enacted into law last year. And so this seeks to just build upon that. So looking at existing law, that which was passed, that when there is an observation of excessive use of force, it has to be reported to the CLIO of the law enforcement agency. And if you see in line 1.11 of the DE, you would see that report has to be in writing. However, there's no guidance for what that written report would be. So what this bill seeks to do is standardize that reporting instrument with elements which would include the name of the officer accused of using excessive force, the date of the incident, the location of the incident, the name of the victim if known, and a description of the force used in the incident. And so that would become the standardized form. There is a note here, and I'm just going to read. If you'll notice on line 1.14, there's a reference to chapter 13.43, subdivision 1. And then on line 2.4, there is a reference to chapter 13.41. And I'll just read a summary of what nonpartisan staff wrote in why that's the case. So here it is in regards to the first reference on page 1.14. The initial report is collected by the CLIO, which is the employer. The data would be personnel data under 13.43 because the data would constitute a complaint or charge against an employee. For that reason, the data would be private at least until the final disposition of a disciplinary action, if any. Then in regarding the reference on 2.4, when the report is given up to the post board, regarding the data transmitted to the post board is a licensing body. Licensing bodies investigating complaints against licensees are governed by data classifications under section 13.41. In general, active investigations by licensing bodies are more private and settled investigations are more public when compared to disciplinary proceedings by employers. So that's why there's a difference in the references there, the cross-reference to existing statute in the handling of the data versus when it's in an employer context versus when it's in a licensing body context. And then lastly, Mr. Chair, I did receive an email from I thought it was OJP. I can't see it here offhand. I think it was
OJP.
And what their concern was is on the DE1, the line 2.2, the reference to the word victim. And there isn't time today, but what I would be amenable to is I understand what they're talking about. And since because of the adoption, this will have to go to judiciary. I would be interested in changing the word victim to potentially the name of the recipient of the potential use of excessive force, something to that effect, to address the concerns, because I do agree with that. So with that, Mr. Chair, that's all I've got.
Very well, members. Representative Lucero, here's kind of the issue. Sending this to judiciary probably kills this bill, given the deadline. And that's why, and I didn't have enough time to signal this to you earlier. That's why I thought what we could do is lay this over, take it up in the omnibus, construction bill, and then let's see if we can, address the issue of the judiciary, as well as address the issue that OJP brought up. If you're amenable to that, we can proceed that way, and then we can work together from here forward.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. In my haste, I spoke and say judiciary, but yes, the motion is to lay it over, so totally good with that.
All right, very well. Members, anything else? Representative Frazier.
Representative Lucero, thank you for bringing this. I appreciate this. I like this bill. So let's talk.
Totally.
About more bills.
Good deal. Absolutely.
That's good. Talking is good, members. All right. Very well. The chair, or rather, the chair. The chair then moves to the chair lays over House 5464 for possible inclusion.
As amended.
As amended. Thank you. As amended for possible inclusion in a possible omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Lucero. To be continued. Members, that concludes our business for today. Thank you all for, again, leaning in. Good discussion. Good work today. We'll see you all next week. Until then, this committee stands adjourned.